Well, Gladys, as I was saying earlier, we're currently embarking on being very active on matters military, and we're having one of the biggest military spends since the Second World War. Frigates, submarines, land missiles. Must be music to the ears of defence contractors, domestic and overseas. But with all the money and all the excitement comes the risk of corruption and bribery. And as defence continues to award lucrative contracts to companies with track records of misconduct, one might ask if we are doing enough to protect ourselves against dodgy practices. One might ask, and I am going to ask Chris Douglas to tell us about it. As I said, he's a financial crimes and governance consultant. He was with the AFP for quite a long time, and now he's on LNL. Welcome, Chris.
Good evening, Philip. Thank you for having me on the program.
The French Naval Group will be designing and building Australia's much-anticipated submarine fleet, $50 billion for their efforts. Tell us about this intriguing company.
Yes, well, the company was chosen by the federal government to build our 12 diesel-electric submarines. And it came about as a result of a competitive evaluation process, which was announced in February 2015. And April 2016, DCNS, which is now known as Naval Group, was chosen a successful international partner to work with the Department of Defence to design and build the submarines. Now, this decision to build the submarines was a little bit unusual in the selection of other major defence assets, in that the evaluation process was not aimed at eliciting and assessing a full design. It was not identifying a firm cost or a schedule of data, which we can look at to see, you know, what the costs involved in each aspect of the build. So this particular contract that we've committed to with Naval raises some concerns. We don't have a firm cost on any of the boats, and we don't have a firm cost on the total contract. They estimate up to $50 billion for the boat. Now, what should be of concern here is that with the Naval Group, it was previously known as DCNS, it has a past history of being involved in corruption. But I just want to make clear, I'm not saying Naval Group, which is now the new name of this company, is involved in corruption now. But the past history is a red flag, and which we need to be asking our governments as have they done due diligence on this company.
Okay, wave that red flag. Tell me what happened in the past when the company was perhaps not as virtuous as it is today.
Okay, it's been implicated, well, Naval Group hasn't been, but its predecessor, the DCNS, has been implicated in a corruption scandal involving the sale of three diesel electric submarines to Malaysia. And that scandal has resulted in the charging of four people in France as a result of a French investigation into the corruption allegations involving DCNS. Now, the people involved, and they haven't yet been convicted, so we can't say too much about the case, but the two of the four people that have been charged, two are former chairmen of DCNI itself. So the question that should be asked is, what has Naval Group done, or Naval Group done, to improve its corporate governance since that contract was awarded by Malaysia in 2002? And since it became public knowledge as a result of the investigation in 2010? That's an important question.
Okay, before we lunge further, I interviewed a guy called Craig Whitlock from the Washington Post about the Fat Leonard story, and that's somewhat instructive. Would you mind briefly describing who the hell Fat Leonard was?
To my background, that one is slim, but it appears to be he was involved in arranging contracts for the servicing of U.S. naval vessels in Singapore and Malaysia. And as a result of that case, a number of U.S. officials have been charged with corruption-related offences and fraud procurement offences originating from the servicing of US naval warships.
I wanted to mention it because it shows the vulnerability or the sometimes the availability of people who should behave much better in government itself.
Yes, but in government itself, both employees and also from major international companies. Just going back to Novell Group, other red flags, not implicating corruption, but poor governance. You may recall, and listeners may recall, in 2016, the loss of data relating to the Scorpion submarines built by India or being built by India. They were the data was taken by a contractor who worked for Novell Group, and it was taken by that contractor and mailed eventually to a Sydney person. A person in Sydney was supposed to receive the data to do some work on that project. So this contractor unauthorised removed the data.
LNL, RN, on your digital radio and online. And the voice from Perth, Chris Douglas, whose career with the AFP spanned 31 years. In December, Fairfax Media acquired confidential documents drafted by a senior Defence Department investigator. And shock, horror, and I actually was shocked and horrified, they allege systematic fraud inside the Defence Department. What exactly did it lay out?
Okay, this is quite concerning, and listeners would be concerned when they hear the details. First of all, a bit of background. Defence in 2015-16 spent $30.5 billion on contracts. 54% of government contractor spending was by Department of Defence.
Now, I find that figure absolutely astonishing.
Yeah, well, and it's a major purchaser, a spender of for services in Australia and overseas, but that dwarfs into insignificance when you compare the big building programs that we're going to undertake soon, especially with 89 billion of warships alone. But what came out of that investigation in the Department of Defence last year was serious breaches of procurement practice, where you had Australian Public Service employees colluding with contracting companies to design well-paid jobs for themselves when they leave the Australian Public Service.
Well, that's so, classic
corruption.
You know, well, it's also what Eisenhower warned when he left office. Do you remember the famous speech about the military-industrial complex?
Yes, we are growing The amount of money we are spending, what we should be looking at, are our corporate governance affairs in relation to anti-bribery and corruption in-house? Now, just going back to that case of Defence, some of the key points that came out of that inquiry were companies were awarded contracts without a competitive tender process. There was weak justification for some of those companies that received contracts and that they really met value for money requirements. But the main concern here, Philip, was 80 contracts breached the procurement guidelines, but 45 were unable to be examined because the paperwork was missing. Now, if you're talking about protecting...
Was it in a safe to be found in a...
well, that's another issue, isn't it? Where we have highly classified documents simply walking out the door. But you can see just from that one example there that was discovered last year, non-compliance with procurement policy, lack of transparency in decision-making and poor records management. How... The taxpayers of Australia need to ask questions in terms of can we trust the Department of Defence to monitor the build of 12 submarines where we don't have a fixed price when they can't even manage simple procurement contracts?
Before we lunge further into the story, it suddenly occurs to me that perhaps some of the cost overruns, which are so spectacular in, you know, when you... developing a new aeroplane or submarine or something, and I'm talking internationally, not Australia necessarily, some of the cost overruns could also camouflage corruption.
Oh, easily. And it's quite a common method to conceal corruption by having a cost overrun. What companies do is tender for a low price with minimal specifications, and they come back later and say, well, These are additional changes that need to be done, or a corrupt employee in a department requests additional changes to be done, and they
might have you know, shown a diagram of an aeroplane with only left, with only right wings, and then come to the decision probably needs a left one as well.
Yeah, well, there are many methods they use to conceal the value in the defence assets that have been sold.
Now, you lament there's been so little public discussion on matters of anti-corruption in our defence industry. Well, compared to major players, the US included, why is the relationship between industry and the Defence Department so quiet here?
I think in many respects it's probably a bit cosy, probably too cosy. Again, back, I'm not alleging any corruption by anybody. I'm just going to highlight some red flags. But just look at the tone of the selection process. The DCNS or Naval Group was chosen a successful international partner. Just that word alone indicates that, yes, we've got to work together and cooperatively, but are those in defence going to be asking the hard questions about the cost of components and you know, the building of certain parts of the submarine and the servicing and so forth? You don't want to be too close to your supplier, because then you become friendly and you stop asking those difficult questions. But getting back to your question there, Philip, we haven't evolved in this area. There is an international standard now on anti-bribery management systems, and
Australia was a part of the working group, wasn't it?
It was, yes, it was, and it helped design that particular standard. But we're seeing a reluctance by organisations, particularly government departments, to embrace it. And this standard reflects international best practice. Unfortunately, if you just look at the Attorney General's website and the Department of Home Affairs websites, there's little guidance in Australia on what actually constitutes an anti-bribery and corruption compliance program. So unlike the UK and US, where they set out the requirements, there's none that I can find at the government level, which is quite worrying given the amount of money we're spending on defence.
Okay, last week Federal Labor came out belatedly and even a little reluctantly to back the creation of a national anti-corruption agency. Now, that usually has smaller fish to fry than what we're discussing, but might it be a help?
Yes, it would. I'm a supporter of a national agency to combat corruption at the federal level. The Senate looked at that particular issue. And the arguments put forward for why one should not be established were quite weak and did not take into account the huge spending that is now Australia's now going to embark on, not just with defence, but with other programs as well, particularly in the health sector. The inquiry also did not look at expanding what the role of that agency could undertake, not just looking at corruption in the Australian public service and government agencies, but it should also be looking at what contractors that engage with Commonwealth departments are doing, and also look at what Australian companies operating offshore are doing in high-risk jurisdictions.
We were talking before away the way very significant documents have gone missing in our recent history. What happened to that 1,000-page manual that BAE mislaid?
The government came back and said it wasn't a classified manual, but 1,000 pages is a lot of document to lose. It gives an indication, again, of sloppy procedures, sloppy governance, and that's a red flag.
I haven't seen so many red flags since the last May Day march in Red Square. Good on you, Chris. Chris Douglas from Malkara Consulting, who served for 31 years in the Australian Federal Police. And if any politicians are listening to this story, I think you should do something about it.